Okay, and we're testing 1, 2, 3, and the clock is not working at the moment. And we're not, okay, we are seeing the volume going up and down, so we're doing well there. Clock is not working. We did change the comm ports already to what it showed in Device Manager.
Okay, so you probably need to change it in the actual recording.
Okay, we are working.
Okay.
Testing 1, 2, 3, and the clock is working. Thank you.
All right, well, yeah, that clock is gonna be a bug, I think. You ever done the comm port thing?
Call this meeting to order, the fellow city council workshop, September 2nd, 2014. Would you all please rise? Ken Johnson will lead us in an invocation and a pledge of allegiance.
Father God, thank you very much for letting us be here today, and thank you for the many blessings that you bestow upon this city and its citizens. And we ask that you be with us tonight in our information gathering and that you could give us the wisdom and knowledge to help guide us through the best decisions. For this, we pray in your name. Amen.
To the flag of the United States of America and to the republic for which it stands, one nation, under God, indivisible, with liberty and justice for all.
May be seated. Moving on to item 1.03, roll call. All of our council members and mayor are here in attendance. Thank you for coming. And we'll move to item 1.04, citizen input. We had a request from Erica Rattray to be here tonight, but I don't see her present. So with that, I would like to open it up to, this is the portion of the meeting that citizens have an opportunity to come, speak to the city council about any issue they wish for up to 5 minutes. I'd ask you to raise your hand. You can be recognized, and then you can come to the microphone and state your name and address, and the council will hear your, whatever your concerns or suggestions are. So is there anyone who would like to address the Othello City Council tonight? Okay, hearing none. We'll move on to item 2, current business. And 2.01, groundwater management update. And we have with us tonight Paul Stoker, who's gonna give us an update. He's provided a handout. Paul, would you care to come forward and address the city council?
Hi, I'm Paul Stoker, Executive Director of Columbia Basin Groundwater Management Area. The groundwater management area has obtained significant funding to provide an assessment activity for the future of groundwater resources for the cities of Othello and Moses Lake. We've been working on it for about 18 months. It follows about 15 years worth of research we've done on the basalts in this particular area. What you have in front of you is something I tried to explain. It's gonna hit the highlights of the report that we will put out in detail in the next about 30 days. The first slide that you see is a demand supply curve, and it's based on the documentation we obtained from your Public Works Department and your city comp plan. The red line is your current usage and or your future demand capacity as it increases at 2% per year. And you'll notice there that right now it's at about, what is that, 7-something. And on the left, MGD is 1 million gallons per day. And the blue line is the capacity of your basalt wells currently. And you'll see that they're just barely above. And they cross over roughly, and that one somewhere around 2015. This particular graph is designed to reflect to you the maximum daily demand on any one given day of the year, so the highest day of the year. Let's say it's probably in the summertime, maybe you're getting it along, would be my guess. So probably somewhere around 2015 in the summer, 2016, this projects that you will have a difficulty meeting the demands of your users. And you see that goes out to 2046, and so this is a 25-year more or less projection of assessments. Go to number two, second one. This particular graph, and these come from a tool that we have created called Interactive Tool that allows us to, or you, we'll be giving it to you at the end, and you'll be able to take several options, such as in this particular case, drilling basalt wells. These basalt wells are projected at about 1,000 gallons a minute, roughly similar to what your expectations might be, for instance, well number 9 or 10. So this would be roughly a 9 or a 10 as you see it here. And you can see that if it goes online around 2016, that it does jump you up above your demand curve. However, the other 7 wells continue to lose capacity. And so your overall capacity, even with the assistance of the new well, quickly within about 2 or 3 years gets back to your demand curve again. And if you were to drill a second well, it would also jump you up again. So each one would give you a couple, 3 more years of capacity as the other wells continue to deteriorate. So in your budget, as you've spoken about your budget in the past, these new additional wells, anywhere from 1.5 to 2.5 per well. And as you can see, they just give you a little blips. You can continue drilling more basalt wells. It's expensive. You can continue drilling them, but primarily the other wells will start failing even faster, so it gets to be more difficult to maintain. Go to number three. The objective of our assessment was to look at your supply of groundwater, and we'd done a report back in 2012 that outlined of the 25 cities here that virtually all of them were suffering from basalt static water level declines. And so Moses Lake and Othello were chosen to ascertain, as you saw the previous slides, how long your current basalt structures would last and what your opportunities were. And we define the water supply in the future in two categories. The basalt categories are non-rechargeable. Water's 30,000 years old, and then sustainable water. And in the case of Othello, reasonably, the only sustainable water at the moment would be some relationship with surface water, such as the Potowitz Canal to the west of town. And go ahead and go on to the next one. We'll cover that later. This is another slide. Same demand and same supply curve that you saw before. However, you notice you have a couple of blips down at the bottom on the left. That's the previous indication of drilling your two potential basalt wells and what they do. The other two large blips on the screen there are 5 MGD or 5 million gallons a day or 6 MGD, roughly in that neighborhood, plants that would be built here in the city of Othello area to clean and store water from the Potowitz Canal essentially into the basalt layer, shallower basalt layers under town, and or at the same time being able to utilize water through the system into your tanks during the day as you would demand and use it while there's water in the canal. But the canal itself, of course, is only seasonal and only runs from about April 1 till roughly around mid-October and other various discontinuities. So you would only be able to use it during those time periods when there's water available. So therefore, what is being added is a concept called ASR. And ASR is short for Aqua Storage and Recovery. Very prolifically used a concept technologically in the United States and throughout the world the last many years. It basically means you clean the water up out of the canal, drop it down into some of the basalt layers where you store it like a reservoir, and when you want to use it, you pump it back up with the probably an Othello with most of the existing wells you already have. Okay. Notice that it goes out to about 2037 on that particular graph. These particular blips are just suggestions. You can make the the plants, of course, as large as you wish. 5 MGD was just one that we worked on that size. Go to the next one, please. Go to the next one. We'll come back to this one if you will. Oh, you passed the one I was learning. Something's missing, huh? Oh, there it is. No, there's another one. Okay, it's not going to show. However, what this, the final screen shows is that if you were to put in sufficient ASR, that it would be a suggested concept that, and pick a time period, let's say 10 years, or I'm going to say, that after a period of 10 years, you'd have enough capacity from ASR to supply the city and all of its needs. And the reason for that suggestion is that it's likely prudent in our observation that as the dwindling supply of water in the basalt deteriorates, at some point in time, you may want to cease using it. In some of the other layers that you don't put ASR into. Those layers then become a backup. So if for some reason there's a glitch in your ASR project, or you don't save enough water all winter, let's just say, oh, some of you don't do that, that you still have water to draw upon rather than draw the entire basalt source to zero. And so the suggestion would be that you consider at some point in time in the near future, as your basalt supplies deteriorate, that you leave a residual so that you have a backup capacities to survive issues and problems, and et cetera. The two projects that you saw listed on that first, that second, third graph, cost about $5 million each. And the projected budgets you have for your two basalt wells are running roughly in that range, depending on how they come out. You would get about 2.8 million gallons a day from the basalt wells, and you get 10 million gallons a day from the ASR projects. The ASR projects get a little more cost effective the bigger they get. And the final graph that you didn't get to see, of course, I think it's on your page. If you turn to the second page, and you look at the bottom one, you'll see that particular one. And if you look closely, I think that final line is at 17 MGD. So that's the size of the projected ASR implementation. Okay, close that and go to number two. Okay, this is part of the just a small part of the database we use to create tools that we've been showing the outcomes from. And I wanted to show you, if you look, do you have a pointer or something? I can point my finger, I guess. Okay, there you go. Thanks. This one's better? All right, better. You like that? All right. The original depth of water is in this column here. This is when you drilled a well in these particular years, this was how deep it was. This over here is the last readings we have on May 27th. And let's see if I get the right column here. Non-pumping is with the pump off. And I think you have to go over a little bit. Okay, pumping. This is the depth of water with the wells pumping as of May 27th, or not too long ago. It's probably likely there lower as the demand has gone on. But you'll notice here, and go on over a little bit more, just a little more. You notice the use in March is 2,350 MGD or gallons per minute. And you notice here that the demand in May is 5,700. And I would expect if we did the same similar tally now in July and August, it would be higher. And the more that you, the harder you pump the wells, the farther down they drop. And they only drop to a certain point, and then you really have to start restricting the well back because it will suck air then and it'll cause problems. So that's why some of your capacities start to deteriorate and go down, that your wells can't pump as much because they have to pump either from a deeper depth or you have to restrict them to keep them sucking air. This gives you an idea of what your wells are doing at the moment. And this is the preposition upon the fact that the first page where you have an inability to meet your demands comes from that. Okay? All right. Jump out of that. Number three. This, keep it open. I'm going to just jump down through the PowerPoint and show you a couple of things. This is a PowerPoint. Yeah, go back to the menu of the PowerPoint. Then end the show. There you go. Thank you. Just go down to the fancy pictures right there. Okay, this is how ASR works. You'll have a layer of water here under Othello about every 100, 150 feet, or basically broken interflow material. We isolate the appropriate ones to store the water in, and basically you drop water down in, and as you can see by the pictures on the back side of your handout, it shows a bubble being created. And so your clean stored water will go down into those one or more layers and slowly push out. And then when you turn the pumps back on, it would slowly pull them back in again. And that's how it works. Okay, move on down the left side. Just keep going with it. Okay, right there. Oops, right there. We like pictures. Okay, this is Beaverton, Oregon. They have an active ASR project there. And this is similar to what we have. You see they have different layers, just like we do. And they drop water down into those layers, store it, and pump it back up again. Go to the next one, right there. Make it big, and we'll just go through some. Okay, this is their down pump facility house. Next one. This is their facility. Looks a lot like yours, just in reverse. Keep going. And here are some of the different well sites that they use to put their water down and some of their filtering and cleaning materials that they use to put their water down in the ground. Next one. There you go. They're installing the piping system to drop water down in the ground. Another one. Okay, this is how some of their wells work. This is a new ASR well right here. A big, large well, and it has a liner, and you see where it's putting water into these different layers where you have the open filters right here. And this is an old well that they're pulling water back out again. See how that works. Okay? And that's good enough. We've seen enough of that pictures. Okay. There were some cost factors in the Beaverton scenario, and they were roughly the same as what's in the cost scenarios that are in the report that we're giving you. They're running from between $700,000 roughly to potentially $1 million per MGD capital cost. And operating costs here in Othello wouldn't be very high, simply because the water in a puddles canal is relatively easy to filter and treat. Okay, so sum it all up, because I'm just supposed to give you a summary here. You have the salt wells. The water is 30,000 years old. You will have difficulty meeting demands with the current wells without help. I think you're going to know that in the next couple, 3 years. You have already agendized to spend money to drill well number 9. We don't know what that's going to do until it's tested. Expectation is 1,000 gallons a minute, which is 1.4 MGD. You saw the chart based on the expectations that it would give you a couple, 3 more years, but then the total would still start to deteriorate. And an additional well 10 would probably be similar. So what would likely come out of our suggestion of the assessments is that you find a sustainable source of water. One likely sustainable source of water would be the Potholes Canal. and you would probably accomplish that with an ASR project because the well isn't continuous year, the water in the canal isn't continuous year-round, you have to have a way to store it. Cost-effectiveness of the ASR is either equal to or less than the salt drilling, but the water is sustainable. They cover all basics. I think the report's huge, and I could tell you a thousand other things, but I wanted to just get the basics done. So now just ask me all kinds of questions. You should ask me questions.
Counsel?
How goes the work with the Bureau in getting access to the water in the canals?
Well, technically and pragmatically, there will be no serious discussions about M&I contracts, et cetera, until you express an interest to engage in those discussions at that point in time. But my answer is that, yes, I believe that is likely. The one thing I did leave out to this project process is the offer that I provided to your city manager and to your mayor the other day. The current administrator of the Office of Columbia River has expressed an interest in cost sharing with the city at a rate of 50% on a ASR project, and which would reduce the cost of the ASR to you substantially. And already just finished completing one for the city of Kennewick, and he has several other projects that he is accomplishing in that manner. He has been working both in the Yakima Valley and in the basin with the Bureau for the last 9 years, and he feels very confident that the water can be obtained. Outside of that, life is hard, and you fuss with it.
So I got a question on, they're worried about commingling of the aquifers already.
Yes.
So if we're pumping water in there, how is that going to work?
First of all, the location and destination of where you store the water would be part of the process of putting a project in, and you would select certain layers. As you saw in the Beaverton one, they had a constructed well scenario that was only open to certain layers, and you would be open to certain layers. And certainly Department of Ecology would be a part of that decision-making process. But most of your wells are open to the Wampum group, and therefore you would be not commingling the two large groups of water, Grand Ronde and Wampum. You'd probably stay in the Wampum. You'd want to do that. Keep your water table high.
So did you do any preliminary calculations as to how much water could be pumped into each one of these particular wells to make it feasible? So for instance, you're talking about like this last page.
Uh-huh.
I mean, are we going to be able to pump enough water into these wells that would actually benefit us later in the winter to, you know where I'm getting at? Mm-hmm. I want to know whether, do we have a capacity? Do we have any of those kind of numbers?
I can't give them to you right now, but the answer is yes, you do have capacity here. Remember, you've been pumping from this source for a long time, so there's a pretty big hole down there, and several of your wells have pretty prolific layers capable of taking a lot of water and giving up a lot of water. So yes, you do have the capacity to store a lot of water and to quickly store the water and to actually retrieve the water when you want. So I can't quote you numbers right here off the bat. I could get them for you, but I don't think that's been an issue for us that we worry about.
So one of the worries, another additional thing that would be a consideration is that, well, let's say we pump 20 million gallons of water into a particular well and then we start losing it. It starts dissipating out into layers of basalt that we're not able to recapture, or sinking below. You see what I mean?
I do.
Through the fracture of basalt and I mean, in other words, it's not like pouring it into a glass of water. I mean, down below is the geography down below, Paul, is you know, has fractures, has fissures, is not exactly a perfect scenario, and so I just wondered whether you guys had considered that in your research.
It would be similar to Beaverton, similar scenario. Mm-hmm. The communication between the layers isn't that prolific that you would, in any one year, you'd be losing that volume. Remember, basically what you're doing is you're dropping water into an already existing pool of water, adding to it, and then taking it back out again. So it's doing whatever communicating is doing with or without your water. So you're going to add to it and then bring it back out again. It will still do what it does. Remember, the water that's down there is 30,000 years old. That means it's been there for 30,000, hasn't gone anywhere. Pretty much, it's there. And as far as intercommunication of fissures with the basalts, it is our expectation that that communication is very limited. We find in the thousands of wells I've been to and the well logs I've gone through, there's a different static head in almost every layer that a well driller goes through. You can't really hold a different static head in an interflow zone for 20,000 years with there being a lot of communication up or down between the layers. It's impossible. Otherwise, the static head on all the layers would be exactly the same. And it's not the case. So we feel fairly comfortable that the communication between the layers is limited, and the static water level pressure between layers is so low, communication would be very low.
I also realize your report is geared towards, the conclusion is geared towards a steady, sustainable supply.
And no, it's not. That's a conclusion that I felt I should give to you. The report that we have takes all the different options and the costs. And of course, I didn't throw them up here for you because they're very expensive and they're non-sustainable. In the case of Othello, you really only have two sources of sustainable water. There are four sustainable wells on the other side of East Slope Canal that we have identified that are 100% new water. But to purchase those water rights and transfer them here would be extremely expensive. And so I don't put them up as an option, even though they're there. And they're limited to about 4,000 gallons a minute capacity, which is well below your future needs. So it seemed reasonable to present to you simplicity tonight, where would you ever find sustainable water? And that at the level of 23 MGD, which is 25 years from now where your family is, where are you going to get 23 MGD if your basalt wells deteriorate to very low soon? Where are you going to find it? Well, you're not going to run a pipeline to Columbia River, so where is it? And so that's all the other alternatives of drilling Grand Ronde wells and Wanapum wells and more and more and more, they're all in the report. And it's an interactive unit, and we showed it to Wade. We're sort of polishing up the reports right now, but you, and I have it here if you want to look at it, but you select which one you want, what year you want to do it, and it'll tell you how much it costs, and then the graph will show you how quick it deteriorates or how it doesn't deteriorate. These are just the alternatives that that appear to be of most significance that I can show you in 10 minutes.
Thank you.
A couple of questions.
Yes, sir.
Water source for Beaverton, Oregon, what is it?
Their surface water source, they got a water quality problems. They were pulling basalt water, and the basalt water was not usable, and it was costing a horrendous amount of money to clean it up. And they took water, I believe they get water from a nearby creek or river, as I recall. Don't quote me, I'm just remembering this. And they it's not hard to clean up, and they put it down. It creates a bubble similar to this, but as you saw, it's in three different layers, and then they pump it back out again.
Are they utilizing any of it after cleaning it, rather than pumping it back into the ground?
I'm sure they are. I didn't.
Okay. I just was wondering what percentage of the water
I don't know the
that they were producing were they using?
I don't know the answer to that.
Okay. And are we looking at the South District Canal or the East District Canal for the M&I water?
Well, I think this is part of the discussion that has to happen. I don't have an answer to that one.
And basically, you only have about 180 days of availability, 6 months worth of availability from either one of the two canals.
Yes. April 1 to October something.
Yeah, and if you're going to treat 5 million gallons a day, put in a system that would treat 5 million gallons a day, you're going to produce roughly 900 million gallons of water.
Yes.
In 180 days.
Right.
And that equates to 3,000 acre feet of M&I water that you would be withdrawing from the canal.
The numbers are correct. That's correct.
So we'd have to find out, first of all, whether that was available.
Mm-hmm.
Primarily out of the South District, because it's right here next to town. We wouldn't want to have to pump water all the way from the East Canal.
No. That's correct.
And then the other thing, too, is whoever's drawing out of this area, whoever has a straw in this bowl, is going to take that water that you're putting back in there.
Correct. There are very few wells in that category. Most of the wells are domestic wells outside the city, and the one that McCain's has, that are within this hydrologic group. And so they usually don't go that deep. Part of the feasibility of this whole process would be to do a well log analysis of the hydrologic footprint of this particular area and determine the answer to what you are saying.
So you'd target like 600 to 800 feet for the storage level?
Let's just say that was the level.
Yeah.
For argument's sake.
And wouldn't you want to also, if you're treating water, use that treated water within your system to provide for to your residents and give your wells a rest, because then the pressure would build back up in the zone?
Yeah, as I said before, not only that, but I would, in the long run, cease using your basalt wells to allow them to be a backup for you in the long run. You know, we're talking the 25-year vision of how to move forward. But yes. And then I didn't really mention the fact that, as far as we can tell, the city of Othello is bounded hydrologically, geologically, on all four sides by structures that prevent movement of water into our area. So essentially you're pumping from essentially a bathtub is what it boils down to. And we have the Frenchman Hills Fault on the north and the Saddle Mountain Fault on the south. There are some fault lines across the valley between here and Royal. And pardon my French, but the Jackass Monocline and the Ginkgo Dyke system are to the east between here and Bruce. These four structures isolate Othello, and it's easy to see that as you can see static water levels surrounding you outside those structures compared to the static water levels that you have. It's substantially larger. So I suggested to Wade that he contact the Office of Columbia River Manager Derek Sanderson in regards to comments about cost share potential, and I assume he has done that.
Yeah, I did that. There's a process to go through. Then we, like you said to start it, we have to express real interest in it. One thing that you didn't talk about, Paul, was the cost per acre foot of water. Derek said it was about $54 per acre foot to bring it out of the canal, as well as the cost of running that plant, which will take, you know, another staff, couple staff members.
The numbers that we have include those.
Include those? Okay. Yes. That includes that.
Correct.
The $5 and $6 million, or the?
Yes, the capital part of it, yes.
But there'll be an annual cost.
There is an operating and maintenance cost in it. We have toyed with the issue of whether to put operating maintenance in or out. And the reason is because the basalt well, current basalt wells, maintenance and power usage from pumping from 700 or 900 feet versus where it appears the cleaning cost is gonna be smaller, they start to offset each other. So we're struggling with that. We know what the operating maintenance cost is of the cleaning, but how much more will it add to your budget? We're not quite sure because we don't know what your current operating costs would be reduced. So, yes, the best news is that the cost of cleaning is relatively small because of the limited amount of issues you have to resolve out of the canal. Because the Columbia River water, or the Sullivan Dam water, what do you call it, is reasonably easy to clean up.
Okay. So, do you use the existing holes, or do you have to drill a new hole to get the water down there?
The answer is whatever's necessary. But yes, we probably likely use existing holes, and yes, both. once you move forward in this direction would be then to start the feasibility of what you should do and what layers you would identify to do it with, and all those technical science details that surround how to build an ASR project that answer questions that you're suggesting, which was in that slide presentation with Beaverton, but I skipped over all of it because it was a little boring to you. But yes, you go through all that mechanism, which layers you put it in, how fast, which wells, where do you drill them, which ones wells you pull it out with, where do you put the cleaning, so it's all those answers, yes. But the best thing about an ASR scenario, assuming you get the bureaucracy, the bureau figured out, is that 100 years from now you'll have water. And that's a good thing.
Thank you, Paul. Any further questions, Council? Do you have an estimated time of the final report?
Thought about 30 days from now. I hope I'm not wrong. But,
okay. Near the end of the month or 1st of October?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
And if you're so interested in the ASR scenario, there are some experts that I can have to answer all those questions that I can't answer because I'm not that kind of expert. That if you really want to delve into it more with more questions, I can arrange that.
Well, we've made contact with a gentleman from the, I forget what,
Office
Department of Ecology.
Yep.
Yeah.
Correct.
And
the expert I'm referring to is the one that was the coordinator and engineer and et cetera for the Kennewick ASR project. I have access to him. So he's a good source. He's been through it and done it. They took Columbia River water and put it into the ground there, and that's working now. And they do the same thing at Wallula, and the same guys did that. So yeah, there you go.
Thank you, Paul.
Okay.
Okay. Moving on to item 2.02, proposed ordinance to amend OMC Chapter 1. Catherine had given us a memo about that item, and I believe our police chief, Phil, were you going to just kind of give us an outline of what we got in store?
Yes, sir. Ladies and gentlemen of council, Honorable Mayor, I've spoken with Catherine on this. I'm losing my voice, so I hope it doesn't go away too much. And I've also talked, one of the first days that I was here, I was talking with Heather, our code enforcement officer, and she's describing to me one of the issues that she's running into is, you know, we have this tool bag, and all we have in it is a sledgehammer. Catherine's been looking at this. She'd already been in communication. We would like some additional tools that are not quite as big and heavy. So the recommended or draft that she's put together adds back the notice of infraction that we didn't have. So the current thing is a notice of violation in order to correct or something similar. So a motorhome parked on the street for too many days would be like a $5,000 penalty. She's hesitant to write that, but by the time she goes through the process, they would have moved it. So with the notice of infraction, so we could actually issue a civil infraction for that type of violation with a much less offense, we would have a tool that our staff would be more able to use. So what she's put together again is a draft. It's for discussion. I've read through it a few times. I'm not real familiar with it, but she's kind of explained, you know, that she is moving quite a few of her cities back to this model as she can. And it will require that we make some other modifications through the rest of the Othello Municipal Code to make it sync with this, these changes.
Thank you, Phil. So council, I encourage you to review those changes, and well, I believe it, is that on our agenda?
Not currently, I just thought about that too, but it's been on Monday.
Okay. Moving on to item 2.03, Council Budget Committees, Spencer.
Thank you very much. At our last meeting, we, my chair's spinning out of control here. At our last meeting, we briefly discussed some of the budget process that we're going to be going into for the next couple of months. And part of that consists of the Council Budget Committee meetings that we're going to have here starting at the very end of this month and then the first couple of weeks of October. Last week, I mentioned that I was going to put together a preliminary agenda for these meetings that would have the folks and the time and days and all those things. So tonight, I just wanted to have a conversation with you to see what's going to work for us, what's going to work for your schedules. I tried to put something together that takes your schedules into consideration and your availability, but your schedules aren't my schedule, and it's that can be a hard task. So I'm hoping that tonight we can kind of see what's going to work, and maybe share the load with equity among council members. So we have seven different groups. The last one, I'll move this up here in just a sec. The very first meeting is where we discuss some contracts for the upcoming year. This is a meeting that Debbie heads up, and we'll discuss contracts for the upcoming year. For each one of these groups, I went back to our council committees, and I just populated each category with the existing council committees. That doesn't set these in stone. We can still work these around and do what's going to work for your schedules also. With that, do you have any concerns or any suggestions if you do have concerns with your schedules and availability?
I guess I kind of talked to you a little bit earlier about it. I'm on 5 of 7 of those, and I don't mind doing them, but with me working construction and a lot of it's out of town, I can't make it at 12 o'clock or sometimes probably not even at 4 o'clock.
So we have you under contracts. That's at 4 o'clock. There's law enforcement, noon, water sewer, street water sewer, solid waste down here. Number 6 is special revenue and debt service funds. So we have you on those 5. Is there someone else who is able to take one of those?
I'll take his law enforcement one at noon.
I'll take the water sewer street.
I'd like to stay on that, the solid waste, street water.
Okay.
You want those two, street water?
Yeah, I'd like to stay on
that. Solid waste? So what about special revenue debt?
Yeah, I can stay on those three there. Special revenue debt service, solid waste,
and 6.
Street water and sewer.
Okay, so
yeah, so we're keeping you on 1, 5, and 6, and so with
4, 5, and 6.
So with number 3, I'll take you off and add Councilmember Wallace. You wanted to stay on street water sewer.
Yep, 4, okay. 5, and 6.
With number 1, is that where?
One.
Okay.
Contract.
I'll put you under number 1.
Is there any way we can move 5 to 5?
5 to 5? Sure. Yeah, does that work for everyone else?
So that's this.
Check the first two off. I think we're fine with those. So number five, if we move this to 5 o'clock.
That's good for me.
Okay.
Any other questions or concerns, Council?
About contracts. Move it to 12 noon. Does that work for you guys? Or?
Yeah, that's fine.
Do you want to do that? Okay. So these are just a couple of changes.
Okay, so you provide us with the revised.
Yeah, if you want. I might be able to show you. Some of these will look like. Are you meeting right now, Mayor, or in the future?
Excuse me.
Do you want to see the revisions right now?
No.
Okay.
Just make sure we get circulated.
Yeah. Yeah. I'll send the revised copies out. Yeah. With that, if we're go, then we'll go forward with this schedule. And just keep in mind that we can always make changes here and there as it's needed. But with that, I guess we'll stick with this for now. Thank you very much.
Okay, now have you, I do have a question.
Yeah.
Is there possible for you, at this point in the process, your email is going to be very helpful to you to get information back and forth, either from Spencer, myself, or the administrator, or the department head. So if you guys could make yourselves available to receive information, I would assume then you could, like for instance on contracts, send out preliminary information to the members on that, preliminary information on all these different seven items.
Yeah.
And then that way they have a chance to review it before they come to the meeting.
Yeah, come to the meeting.
And then they can be prepared for, you know, the discussions and the direction that you've laid out for us. I think that would be really helpful for everybody on the committee to do that. And since I'm on all of them, it could be helpful to me. But I've already seen the whole budget. It would be nice to have the council to see their particular functions that they're going to be looking at. So,
yeah. I'll send those out to all the emails. Yeah. Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Item 2.04, well, number 9 update. Wade is going to give us an update today.
Mayor and Council, after our discussion last week, about Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, we actually punched through 1,100 feet and then got down to about 1115 where they hit a water bearing zone in the Grand Line. It was said negative pressure. It didn't have as much pressure as the zones above it did, so we had the downflow where the Department of Ecology said at that point we had to seal it off, as I briefed you all. And so and that's what they did this weekend. They sealed off from 1100 to 1115 or so, somewhere in that zone, with both concrete bentonite and pea gravel in that area. They let it cure over the weekend. They were supposed to do another camera today. They did one on Thursday, which I was out there Thursday for the camera to go down 1,100 feet. Pretty boring video, but it was interesting also, actually. And it showed that you actually see where the zones were, the water bearing zones that they were hitting, and you could actually see the downflow. So they sealed it off. The report we got back today is that there was no more negative downflow. The static water level came back up. It dropped about 100 feet. It came back up to 53 feet from 150 feet or so that it dropped down to. So that was a good sign. And so the next steps are that, like I said, a video today to make sure everything looks stable, collapse or anything. They're going to let that cure some more. And they will do a pump test, hopefully on Friday. It's called a step test. A step up to carry equipment if I'm wrong, a step test. They start hitting the different draws, is that right?
Yeah, they're going to pull out pretty hard.
Pulling pretty hard?
Yeah, pull a little harder. See what they need. See what it will produce. And then tax it pretty good.
Yeah, for short, fairly short intervals, just to see what it can do, and then they'll go in again. They're going to start on Tuesday the 9th of September. They're going to really pump it hard and do a 24-hour test to see what kind of draw they can get out of 24 hours. So that'll be a week from today. They'll do that. So that's where we are with it. It's looking pretty good still. Looking good still. And by, well, not next council meeting, but the one at the end of the month, we'll know more, but I'll give you guys a report. Email it to you or something, let you know how we're doing. And if the well is producing like we want to. We're looking, hopefully, keep our fingers crossed, to get more than the 1,000 gallons per minute that Paula talked about. We're looking to get, hopefully, above 1,500. If that's the case, it helps out a lot. The other thing is, when I was out there looking at the video, one of the guys was out there that we've been talking to, John, I can't remember his last name, one of their experts, I asked him, you know, show me where it looks like it's on the other side of that fault line that Paul talked about, and he showed me a couple of places where it indicates it is on the other side of that fault line. So that's even better information, because that means it'll be more sustainable, we hope, than the wells we have here. So, looks good so far, keep fingers crossed. Questions?
How about the water quality? Is there any been...
Good question, Ken. Yeah, when they hit the last water bearing zone at about 1080 or so, the fluorides were still down below 1.0, they were down at... I'm sorry, I can't remember exactly. Too many numbers floating around up here. They were still very low.
0.83.
Yeah, thank you. 0.83, something like that. Mm-hmm. So down below 1.0. Still good.
And what is it we're allowed?
Four.
Yeah.
For fluoride.
Excellent.
MCL.
Four. So the fluoride.
Good water quality then.
No, the water quality is really good. So we're just looking after good flow. Other questions? Okay, I'll continue to keep you guys updated.
Thank you, Wade. Item 2.05, Public Works Report. Terry, brought a lot of information today.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. I guess the last council meeting, I missed the last council meeting. You guys had some questions on the wastewater treatment plant, what our current flow is, and what our future capacity is for expansion. We've got a report that we had drawn up here from GNO. Our average annual flow in their letter from GNO. Do you want to switch to that there, Spencer, for me? The average annual flow is based on average for the year. We're at a 1.45 million gallons a day. That's our average for the year. Our max flow, month flow, is 2.18 MGD, which is the highest average in the year. We currently are permitted for a max flow of 7.5 MGD for our permit out of the wastewater treatment plant. We have certain things that we can take in the wastewater treatment plant and certain things we can't take, and high pH, anything under a 5, anything over 11 we can't take. Everything has to be basically to domestic sewer, either be pre-treated by the processing plant down to a domestic sewer state before it can be accepted. But we have a permit, we're only permitted for domestic sanitary sewer, not industrial waste, in our treatment plant currently. Any questions on that portion of the wastewater treatment? The next item that came up was rolled curbs. This took a little bit of research to go back on, so you kind of have to hang with me here a little bit. The original ordinance was developed in 1955, which is back in the day, in quite a ways. And it was brought up in October 10th, 2005, in a agenda, the minutes of a meeting here, Sagestone Plat 1. It was brought up by Mr. Councilmember Spohr. He questioned the approval of rolled curbs for one street within the Sagestone development. He thought the OMC provided for a type A curb, which is a type A is a vertical curb that we use out here, just like we have in the Palo Verde Estates, Main Street, which is a straight up down vertical curb. not roll curb. City planner Kurt Andrews advised the roll curbs were not allowed, were allowed 20 years ago. However, due to the desire to not have them, a study was performed and it has been determined not to allow them. So in 95, the ordinance had been changed. And in it, in 2007, it changed again, still with the standard vertical curb, not a roll curb. We had roll curb at the irrigation district on Main Street, and we pulled it out. Roll curb works in some areas, and it doesn't work in others. And what we found here is two things. When you have roll curb and you're plowing snow, you have a tendency to be up on the curb, up on the sidewalk, and then and basically you get a drift and you're into the grass, so to speak. A lot of people have a tendency to park on the sidewalk and use the rolled curb for driveways onto the grass. And we see a lot of that. So back in 2007, the ordinance in chapter 16.29.160, which streets will all be improved to the edge of paved roadway with type A Portland concrete curbs. That was signed, that ordinance was signed back in 2007, past the 10th day of September 2007, by Shannon McKay in ordinance. Questions?
Well, I'd kind of gone through all of this today briefly, and there's other chapters that cover buildings and developments, plotting and platting, what's acceptable, what's not acceptable. Chapter 11.12 has a definition of what is acceptable and not acceptable. One thing I'd like to know is, where's ordinance 183? Because there's reference to that ordinance. Well, chapter 11.12.010 makes reference to ordinance 183, which was dated November 12, 1956. But it still states in our codes that that's the ordinance. So if that ordinance doesn't exist, then that needs to be removed.
Yeah, it needs to be changed to reflect the current ordinance. That's one of those.
It's not the ordinance to clean it up.
And what I'm trying to say is that we should probably go through each of the different ordinances that cover streets. There's a street ordinance, there's a plat ordinance, and each one of them have curbs, streets, sidewalks included, and they all read differently. So we should try to get all those together and look at them and say, how can we change this to make it all say the same thing?
Yeah, you're right. I've looked at it too. There are some discrepancies. So I know we started cleaning up the OMC a little bit, but we hadn't gotten that far.
Oh. I was going to say, didn't we have a company that was going through and making sure that everything matched? And
we've already done all of that. Our report is getting to the city already. I guess we need to just know what OMC we talk about or numbers, so we can kind of look at it ourselves. And
well, Spence, go to the codes.
Yeah. Chapter 1.
Which one specifically, John? You read it there, 183?
Chapter 11.12.
Driveways, curbs, and gutters?
Yeah.
And refer to which one in that?
There it is, 2.010.
Yep.
Attached to ordinance 183.
Ordinance 183. Ordinance 183, November 12, 1956. It gives you a drawing of what the curb requirements are. So where's that?
Where's that?
Drawing.
Well, we can look for it in our office.
Okay, but it's not posted anywhere in the... I mean, do we even use that drawing anymore? Would we?
Probably not. If it's the one that was in 1956, it was probably changed in 2000 or 95 or whenever, and there's just a discrepancy, and that this didn't get changed to reflect the change.
Language wasn't updated, but the thing is, if it's still, we need to go find that ordinance 183. Is that the drawing you're talking about? Right here?
Yeah.
I don't know.
No? Curb and driveway?
Ordinance 183, yeah, that's it. And those...
So this is in our RC. There's the ordinance for the attachment, right there.
Okay.
I mean, that's what I'm going to say. But if there's things that would be made up...
I don't know where you want to get to there, but I guess you have to know how to travel there.
South Park Municipal Code. If you go to Oklahoma City, Oklahoma, the Municipal Code.
Yes.
At the very bottom is an index, so you can look at scan copies of all ordinances.
Okay, I didn't go there.
At the very bottom is...
Yep, I see it. I see. I didn't get down there. I mean, I looked down there, but I didn't get to it. So. But does that match up, Terry, with this curvage deal that we have here?
No. We have a different design standard even at the Public Works design standard adopted. This is very, very old.
Yeah. So what we have today supersedes that.
Yes.
So we need to get rid of that.
Yeah.
And our standards that we have down there match up with what you have in your hand right there versus a vertical curve, a type A vertical curve.
Okay.
So maybe that section is the next section.
There's some things that, I'm not going to pull any punches here. There's some things in the OMC book that can be changed that are duplicated or triplicated across several sections that could be put together where you got some sewer mixed with some water and things like that, and it needs to be looked at. There's no doubt what John's saying there is reality. It's all over. You can find it in this section, you can find it over here, and it needs to be in one location to make it easier to research and find.
Thank you, staff. Appreciate your finding that for John. John, do you have any further questions?
No.
Okay. Let's go on to the walk path then.
Yeah, so the walk path funds that we have here, pass and trail fund, we put in back in April 28th, I came to council with an agenda memo for a motion to be able to go out on a Washington State Department of Transportation's 2015 walk path project. And it required a match, and the matching funds in kind was $41,000. And what I had done was I went out. The total grant request was $525,000, which took care of all the walk paths across the city. And they are in pretty bad shape. They need to be brought up to standards. They've got they need to be widened out because some of them were used and still used for maintenance. On the school district side back here, which used to be their maintenance road, it is a walk path. They still mow back there as well as we do on our parks. So we went to the county, and I had a meeting with Scott Yeagert and Sean O'Brien, or Todd O'Brien, excuse me, and we talked about this $41,000 here for the match, and we requested through their departments on this trail, and they call it Pass a Trail Fund. For asking them if they could put up the matching funds for that for us. And I haven't heard anything back there. Right now, currently at the Ritzville Fair down there, and they're out for the week, and they might be out for the next week too, but at least we've gotten that far. We're just waiting for a reply back. So that's what that's at.
Have we not budgeted the $41,000 from our budget, Spencer?
No, we haven't included this project in our budget.
This year?
Correct.
Okay. This is a 2015 project.
Okay.
we had to actually start the application this year for it, so, and put it in.
Well, see, you missed your opportunity. You had a county commissioner here, and...
I did, I saw him over there.
Yeah.
So... I wasn't on the front of the agenda. He stayed. That's pretty much it.
That would be nice to redo all of our paths in the city. That'd be very nice.
Yeah, it would. Some of the grass has gotten pretty high in some of the parks, and just make it a lot easier. It'll be a, most of them will be a 12-foot wide asphalt with a foot of gravel each side. The stuff in the park will be 14-foot.
No gravel.
No gravel, yeah. In the park. That way there's no rocks in the grass and everything we brought up.
Have we approached the school district since some of these border their properties and they currently use them for some of their use, possible some of the funding matches?
We did. We did this here a while back, and
especially since they took away some of our walking path, yeah, on the junior high.
Yeah, we did it, and we did it very, very well, but it's not saying we can't go back and try and fare again, but we did. We addressed it, went out and address the curling on the shoulders and the edges and things like that, and it was their maintenance path and road, but we couldn't come to an agreement there, so.
Council, do you have any questions of Terry about the walking path?
Yeah, so is that going to go all the way to 14th, I mean to Main Street?
It, the walk path runs around Lions Park, mm-hmm, comes out on 13th, comes up to, I believe, 14th and comes out. And then it goes over and runs down behind the Palo Verdes Estate and then cemetery and back up, and it runs along Scootney Springs, turns left, and goes around the ball field there to the south and comes behind McFarland and Hiawatha down to the park and through Kiwanis.
So it's the same one that runs along the drain ditch all the way to the USA gas station, right? Is that part of it?
That's part of it, but that portion isn't in this, because that's already been established. It's not something that's in need of repair. It's already up to snuff. It's the remainder of the stuff that we have that was pre-existing prior to that.
So who takes care of the one along the drain ditch?
Well, I think you and I had this discussion out in the deal. I think the weeds that are up there is come off the canal. That's the Bureau.
Well, you can walk that. There's an area where you can, 2-3 feet opening.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty sad for a nice walk path. Mm-hmm. It needs to be cleaned.
We've gone to the Bureau, and the Bureau says it isn't their responsibility. We've sprayed it before in the past. I've had the DOC pull it. But the Bureau doesn't see it that way.
Well, with my experience dealing with the Bureau in the city, when I go to the city blames it on the Bureau. When I go to the Bureau, they just smile and when I go to the city, I get the same response. So there's nothing going, there's no action, from the city or from the Bureau when it comes to doing something that needs to be done.
I have taken the initiative and actually pulled that whole bank of weeds a foot back and sprayed it for the last couple of years. I have gone to the Bureau and asked them for that. They don't acknowledge it, but I don't think the city owns any ditch in town. It's not their responsibility to spray. We can't spray down to the water's edge. We can only spray the foot each side of the walk path.
And the reason I bring this up is because through the course of my development, I've addressed the city and addressed the Bureau in certain occasions. And I think the Bureau and the city of negation have to lead by example, and things that me as a developer have to do. So if you're telling me to do something, but yet you guys are not leading by example, well, that's kind of tough to follow. So for one example that I'm going to put out here on the table today is that fence that I had to put up along the canal. Okay, that was part of the compliance that I had to have through the irrigation and the Bureau. So I put the fence all the way from Cimarron all the way into Cemetery Road. Okay, so now I had a bond, a fence that goes from cemetery all the way pretty much to Walmart, because it's a little drain ditch, probably a foot and a half high, right? So I go to the Bureau and it says, I'm going to bond this fence, but I'm going to put a four-foot fence, kind of limit my expense. See, that's not going to work. You need a six-foot fence. So then I go to the Bureau, I says, if you want me to put a six-foot fence, why don't you lead by example? All along 14, you have a four-foot fence with T-post. You know what T-posts are, right?
Mm-hmm.
They're just the stakes that you put on the ground with a four-foot fence, and the fence is halfway down. The fence, I mean, it's been down for a long time. So that if you cross Main Street and you continue north, that fence stops right at the hospital where the emergency room entrance is. So there's no existing fence going that way, and there's kids that are walking through there all the time. There's kids that live there, in other words.
People use that as a walk path, too.
And people use that as a walk path. Okay, so I says to them, I says, why do I have to put a six-foot fence when you guys have a fence that's knocked down, been like that for years? He goes, he just smiles. Talk to the city, and I talk to you about it. So I came to talk to you about it, and he says, this is what you told me. We do not fix it, because if we fix it, we're liable if somebody drowns.
I don't think you got that from me. I think you got that from my senior guy, and it is a true statement. If you know that there's a hazard there and you fence it, then you're assuming the liability on it.
Okay,
but that's not a city fence.
Okay, so you're telling me my kids walk through there every day. It's okay for them to cross that fence and go drown if they chase a rabbit or something, because you don't want to fix it or the Bureau don't want to fix it.
I'm not saying it's okay for them to go drown.
Well,
but if it's,
that's what I'm getting at. If I have to abide by all them rules, well, I expect the city and the Bureau of Irrigation to follow, you know, to do, step up to the plate.
Okay.
Wait, do you want to answer them?
Well, you know, Angel, what Terry's trying to say is his job is to protect the city's interest in liabilities, okay? That's the Bureau's responsibility. The Bureau's, not the city's. We can't step up the plate without assuming the liability. If we assume the liability, we assume the risk, and our insurance carrier would never cover us for that, ever. So if something did happen, the city would be out.
So I understand that.
Dollars. So we, what I'm trying to tell you, Angel, we, the city, can't do anything with the irrigation district property. We can't. It's illegal, for one. They can come after us, and then we assume this risk that we shouldn't assume. Period. Dot.
So who do I believe? The Bureau says that it's the city's responsibility.
They're full of crap, okay? So,
well, that's what I need to get straight, you know, because they throw me, right. They toss me back and forth.
Then, well, I need to know who you talk to at the Bureau so I can talk to them personally.
Yeah.
That's the way we end this, okay? I'll run this to ground, okay? I will report back to council, okay? But I'm not going to go on, you know, he said, she said. We can't do that. I need to know who you talk to, who it is. I will go over there and talk to them and resolve this about who owns the fence. I mean, it's pretty clear that's Bureau property. They've got, you know, you're not supposed to go on it, you know, in the canal. And then if we went out there and started fixing fences, they'd probably come after us. So let me know who you talk to, and I'll talk to them. Okay? But we can't go out there fixing building fences for the Bureau.
Are we annexed all the way out to Lee Road on 14?
Yeah, our city limits runs out there, and then it kind of crosses. It runs out this direction, and it goes left around the intersection, and it starts up the north side of Lee, okay, back towards McCain's.
So is the canal like the border?
Just our right-of-way, that would be it.
Yeah. So it's not within the city limits?
No. Mm-hmm.
According to Nate, said his name, it is. That's city right-of-way.
14th?
Yeah.
Let me talk to him. Terry, I'll go over there and talk to him face to face and get this straight now.
Nate's the little redhead? Okay.
So all I'm asking is, if I'm putting a six-foot fence that looks decent, you've all seen it, why can't whoever's liable for it do the same thing for the safety of the kids? Because that's the way they made me do it. I was going to do it anyway, because I care about families that are moving in there. But that's all I'm asking. You know, we all live by the same rules.
we can only do what we can do from the city. The Bureau has to step up to their responsibility, and we'll go talk to them and see what they think their responsibility is, and then we'll get our, if necessary, we'll get the lawyer involved. And that's the way we'll do this, okay? But we're not going to go build consensus. Unless, if you guys direct us to, we'll do it, but we need to run that by a lawyer and the insurance carrier first.
That's a good response, Lee. Go see him, talk to him.
Probably get the same answer, huh? Probably.
Well, and at the same time, if you could talk to him about the weeds on their bank, too, because Terry's done everything he can. He's cleared the weeds in our right-of-way, and he sprayed the weeds in our right-of-way, but we can't spray beyond that one-foot section, because then you're on the Bureau property.
Well, they're tough to work with, because I offered.
You might want to let them know that our town's expanding, and it's expanding in the direction of where their canals are, and, you know, they need to be, we would consider that they need to be maintained and protected. You know? So, you know.
We could talk to them, but, you know, after working for the federal government for a long time, you know. I'll just tell you, I can't guarantee the results.
Okay. They have a pretty good public relations, so, I mean, if we show concern, I think that's...
We'll show concern, and Reporter Eric there, I'll let you know what I find out, too. Okay. So hold that story until we get all the facts.
Terry, you have anything else?
Nope, that should be it right there.
Any other questions for Terry? Thank you very much, Terry.
Thank you.
Item number 3 on our agenda is committee reports. Is there any committee reports before the council tonight? Item 4, unfinished business. Is there any unfinished business before the council?
Go ahead, Eugene.
Just a quick question. Where are we at with the skateboard park? Does anybody know?
The last thing we did is we had the company came up, mm-hmm. and they did a site review.
Terry. Yeah. Skateboard park, aren't they going to...
We marked the
line for the park. They were supposed to come up last Thursday and with their geotech and do some perk holes, and I haven't seen them.
Okay. So that's started on it.
So that's part of it right there. So, but I haven't seen them in the park to do their perk hole tests. I'm sure we'd know about it if there was somebody out there digging holes in the park.
Yeah, after talking to them, it looks like they will start it this year and then go up until they can't do concrete anymore. And then come back next year to finish it.
Okay.
That's it. Just on the same subject, I know we received the one grant from the Tony Hawk Foundation. Didn't we apply for another one, and have we heard anything back on that? Didn't we apply for another one?
I know that we got the one. I don't know if we heard anything back on the second.
I don't think so.
I can check with Molly.
We haven't heard on it.
Yeah. We would hear if we had. Yeah. Molly's really good at that.
Another item of unfinished business. I got a phone call from Rob Simmons and wondered if we were going to entertain the RV or four-wheeler recreational vehicle ordinance that would allow.
I'm working on it. I've got the data. I'm just going to put.
It's in progress.
It's in progress. Yeah.
Thank you.
Yeah, he just thought this was going to be a voting meeting, and he was interested in knowing what was going to happen.
Oh no. We'll have the ordinance done by probably next council meeting.
Okay. And we'll have to make it a motion and pass it.
Yeah, well, just to let you guys know, it'll pretty much reflect what the other communities have done. Mm-hmm. So we'll get to you guys, and you can chop on it, and we'll. The next council meeting, perhaps.
Okay. I have one item. Spence, can you put this up so that everybody knows? It's kind of hard to read. Okay. A young gentleman that lives in my district came up to me and asked me what this is all about. According to him, he's ordering a stove from Home Depot. It's going to be delivered to his home. And in order to get it delivered, Home Depot's requesting that he get a permit to receive it at a cost of $40 from the city of Othello.
That's correct. We've had this one on the board a couple different times, and I don't think everybody's given you the proper information. This individual, if he had a delivery truck with a drop gate and a hand truck, he can deliver all day long. This individual came out with a flatbed truck with a piggyback forklift, got out in the middle of the street and decided to do his work. And our right-of-way permits are basically that, you know, any work performed within the right-of-way requires a right-of-way permit. He's delivering for Home Depot. He knows in advance. Home Depot is basically their stock as to what's on the floor. So if you're gonna order a fridge or order a stove, you know in a couple days advance you gotta make a delivery. So I asked him to come in, get a right-of-way permit if he was gonna do that. Now if he didn't unload the spider off the back of his truck and was out in the middle of traffic running around, it wouldn't have been an issue. But he was stopped by the code enforcement officer and asked, and he didn't have one. If it was a regular delivery truck like Sears where you had a drop tailgate in a hand truck and he wheeled it in the yard, that would be a different story. But if you're out in traffic, it's work being performed in the city right away. It doesn't distinguish between that kind of stuff. But if you're going to be out there, it is a hazard.
So how does that get passed on to the individual that purchased the stove from Home Depot? I mean,
it shouldn't be.
Well, that's the way Home Depot's dealing with it, is passing it on to the individual that purchased, in order to get it delivered. He doesn't have a pickup. If he had a pickup, he probably would have brought it home with him, much like I would have. But he's asking to have it delivered, and you know, there's probably a delivery fee. On top of that delivery fee, he's going to be paying an additional $40 to have this individual deliver it. But it's because this particular individual, in the way he delivers things, is...
Well, I guess he's a...
It's Home Depot. They have a flatbed truck with like a portable forklift on the back of it, and they stop in the middle of the road, they block the traffic, and it's the same as construction. They have to have a right-of-way permit to work out there in the right-of-way in the road. Because they're probably not putting up signage, and they're not putting up anything. They're just out there...
That's how the code enforcer picked up on it.
Okay.
He was out in the street and he was working a forklift in the street and traffic was going by, but she stopped him because we have a lot of that. People come in. We had a guy, for instance, putting trusses on Cedar Street, and he had the trailer out in the middle of traffic, but he had taken up almost 2/3 of the street and was swinging them over, and he didn't have a right-of-way permit. He didn't figure he had to. But these people that come in and do that, we get more damage from them people coming in and doing that than we do if they just came in and got a right-of-way permit and we knew where they were. You can never catch them to bill them for any of that. But I explained it to the individual a couple different times, and then he went around and went to the city hall here to Becky and tried to go around that process. And
this individual that does the deliveries?
The same individual.
Okay.
I'd notified him. I'd emailed him. We'd had a conversation. He had a conversation with Tammy.
He's a private contractor working for Home Depot?
Yes.
Okay. Well, I think we need to let Home Depot know that their delivery to Othello in the manner that they're handling it is unacceptable, but we shouldn't pass that on to the citizens of Othello if they go buy a product from Home Depot. I just don't see that as being fair to the individual that came to me and said, I got to pay $40 to get a delivery.
Well, he's probably passing it to the customer, but it's the delivery guy should be picking up the $40.
Well, Home Depot,
you know,
should
to drop it off, not the rest.
If there's a delivery cost for the... For the washer and or the
Is this
stove.
The Moses Lake Home Depot?
Huh?
Yeah.
The Moses Lake Home Depot?
Yes.
Yes.
Yeah. Well, if it's a private contractor that's working for that Home Depot, then they shouldn't be using that private contractor. They need to change contracts.
I just had a complete AC unit installed in my home. They backed up with a van in my driveway.
Yeah. And I've had a washer and dryer delivered from Lowe's in the same manner.
So Home Depot needs to find another delivery person, so they ain't spidering it out in the road.
What I would suggest is the young man that's, you know, being charged that $40 goes back to Home Depot and says, hey, you've got to get me a different delivery person, because this person is passing this $40 on to me.
Yeah, I agree with Gina. we, and John, and all of
that. I was totally, look, I didn't know what this was, mm-hmm. and when he brought it to me, I thought, this is ridiculous. So I asked the question. Now I know. It's the contractor, the individual that's making the deliveries. Mm-hmm. But I do believe Home Depot needs to know about it. That this contractor and the manner that he's handling his business is not acceptable with the code enforcement of Ofello.
I think if he has to pay for the $40, he's just going to tag it on to the buyer anyway. Regardless, buyer's going to pay for it.
Well, if he's contracting with Home Depot. Home Depot can't afford to pass that on to their customers. They can't. I mean, they're competing. And they can't compete with Lowe's.
It's a private hauler. You know,
they need to find somebody else to do the job that's going to do it right, you know, or lose the business.
When you said you had a different one that had a backup right
And mine was through Home Depot.
So they probably have multiple contractors. They just need to know what's going on with this
one. All right. Well, I've got a good enough answer to give back to the individual that approached me. So that's all I was really wanting to know.
Thank you. Thank you, staff. Moving on to item 5, new business. Is there any new business to come before the council tonight? Hearing none, I'll adjourn the meeting at 8:25 p.m.